Today I'll be talking about a topic which perhaps at first doesn't seem appropriate for an entomology meeting, but I'll be talking about spatial and temporal dependence, which is the lack of independence, if you will, among trap counts. And this is an issue in entomology because most of the statistical methods we use assume independence of data as if they came from an experimental setup. And a lot of times with observational data in the field, that's not true. And of course, insects are completely unaware of that assumption, so they violate it frequently. Reasons for dependence among trap counts are that insects, of course, reproduce, so there's carryover from one time period to the next. So if you repeatedly sample, this is something we need to consider. And also with diapause, there's this break between seasons, so we have to account for that in some way. And in space, there's dispersal, which connects trap counts that are adjacent to each other. So the reasons we should care is that this, by accounting for spatial and temporal dependence, it'll give us more accurate estimates of variance. And a lot of times we have a predictor of interest and we're fitting multivariate or univariate models or bivariate models. And in that case, we need to acknowledge the fact that we don't have as much information as we're pretending we have by assuming independence. And the other thing that we can do is account for unobserved variables that influence trap counts. And an example of that would be spatial variation in trap counts due to something we didn't measure in the field. Also, as those of you who have done trapping know, you often get anomalous trap counts. And if you have trap counts that are nearby, you can use information from adjacent trap counts to smooth the estimates so that you don't get a lot of strange variation just due to random variation in the counts. And also, by knowing how the trap counts depend on each other in space and time, we can improve our sampling design so that we're maximizing the information we gain from trapping and maybe space traps appropriately so that we're not getting a lot of dependent counts and having essentially pseudo-replication. And also for forecasting, we can actually use information in time at one time point to possibly forecast future time points. The mosquito I'll be talking about is Culex tarsalis, which is an important vector of arboviruses, including West Nile virus in Western North America. And as a result, it's a target of vector control programs in California and elsewhere. And right now, we're working on developing forecasting models to support the decisions made by vector control districts. And they need information early in the season so they can plan their budgets and when they need to hire people to help control the mosquitoes and do surveillance. Of interest in terms of spatial considerations is that tarsalis has a relatively long flight range, often greater than 10 kilometers. And of course, the number that move that distance decrease over space. And also there are many generations per year in California, which is a temporal consideration, unlike some of the 80s, which have a flooding event in the spring and may have one or two generations per year. Tarsalis has a lot of overlapping generations, which results in this temporal dependence that carries forward over time. And then there is diapause over the winter where they overwinter as females and then emerge to lay eggs the following spring. So my hypotheses are that the neighboring trap counts are dependent in space and that the strength of the connection would depend in some way on the distance between the traps, and also that abundance anomalies tend to persist from one trapping period to the next. So the departure from the mean abundance at one time period would tend to lead to the same direction of departure at the next time point. And I fit terms month to month within each trapping season and then over the winter between trapping seasons to measure this. The study area includes most of California covered by vector control. These are historical data from mosquito control districts. And this is for the decade of the 1990s, which had the densest amount of data for New Jersey light traps. Some of the southern districts have since canceled New Jersey traps just because in urban areas particularly, they don't collect many mosquitoes due to the competition from other light sources. I restricted the trapping season to April through October, which is the typical period that most districts use for their surveillance. and the total was about 36,000 trap months in the data set at these 868 sites you see here. And then I separated the state into these 10 regions, which are hydrologic regions and were convenient for dealing with the different phenology of Culex tarsalis depending on the region. Here's what the mean abundance looks like over a season in California, and you can see there's a lot of variation among the regions. In all regions except the Colorado River, which is, if I can get the mouse to work, is here in the southeastern corner of the state, and this is the hot, dry deserts of the Coachella Valley and Imperial Valleys. You can see that they have two peaks, one early in the season and one late, and part of that's due to overwintering waterfowl areas being flooded late in the season, which results in another pulse of tarsalis late in the season. And similar things are true here, where you have, and this is the hot southern end of the Central Valley, where you have also two peaks. And then in the northern Central Valley, you have the peaks synchronized by rice, largely. And this is also the highest abundance found in the state. So the model I'll be considering today, you don't have to worry too much about this, except that it's the log of a collection rate for mosquitoes. And most of you are familiar with this part of the equation, where it's a typical regression equation and using fixed predictors. The predictors I was considering here are meteorological predictors, and also the other factors determining the mean were each region's own annual abundance patterns for each month and human population density as an adjustment for competing light from urban sources. And these random terms are the ones I'll be considering today. This is the spatial random term and then also a temporal random term, and I'll describe those more in just a second. So for spatial dependence, what we often have is a scenario like this, where we have a given trap and it also has neighboring traps. And as I said before, we can use some of the information from neighboring traps to help estimate the count at this trap. And that is likely to depend on its neighbors in some functional way and within a particular neighborhood. So we don't want to consider all traps in the state as neighbors of a given trap. Oops. So what we do is define neighborhoods, and then we can compare the fits of the model using some measure of model fit. In this case, it's the DIC, which is analogous to the AIC that some of you know from frequentist regression, and I'm using a Bayesian version of that here. The other thing we can compare is the functional form of that relationship and how they depend on each other within the neighborhood, and you can see here some examples of that. There are parameters that can be varied to allow, in this case, this flat line here is just allowing all the traps to have equal weight, and then here's these curves have a higher weight for the traps closer to the trap of interest. So these functions define the decay of the weighting, so that these really steep curves have very, very little weight attached to traps that are distant from the trap of interest. So after fitting the series of models you just saw for the different weighting functions and the different neighborhood sizes, this is the best fit model that we found for Culex tarsalis. And this had inverse distance weighting, which is just one over the distance as the weight, and that's what you can see here. This is in the center of that would be a trap of interest, and the weighting would be defined as this functional relationship. And then the neighborhood of 8 kilometers gave the best fit, which is consistent with the published flight ranges of Culex tarsalis. As far as temporal random effects that connect the trap counts in time, one problem with entomological time series is that a lot of the methods for dealing with time series have been developed for economics and other situations where you have very regular observations over time and there's no break. But of course, we have to deal with this period here where the mosquitoes are in diapause and there is no trapping going on in most cases. So we need something to connect each season to the next, because it's likely that the females going into diapause in some way dictate the size of the population emerging from diapause the following spring. So one way to deal with this is, at least in the Bayesian world, you can fit these autoregressive terms, which connect each month to the next within the trapping season, and then a separate term over the winter. And you can think of these a little like correlations, although they're not quite, because they're not confined to -1 to 1 range. But what a value less than 1 would mean is that it tends toward the mean for the month after. So this would be the April to May connection. This is month to month within a season here. And this means it tends toward the mean, but there's a very strong, significant connection between months. And then the overwintering term was also significantly greater than 0 in this case, which means that there's a weaker connection over the winter, but it still tends to depart from the mean in the same way the following season. And this is a look at the same information, but this is for all the regions of the state. So this is north to south within the coastal region, north to south within the Central Valley, and then the two desert regions. And you can see in most regions, the overwintering term is here it's around 0. Here it tends slightly to reverse, but then in these cases, there's a significant connection over winter, and particularly in the Central Valley, there was a significant connection over the winter and tended to strengthen from north to south, so that possibly the warmer conditions in the south made it more predictable from one season to the next that there would be carryover. And then the month-to-month terms within the season tended to be pretty strong in all regions. So for trapping strategies, the implications of this is that since about 8 kilometers was the range for spatial dependence, if you space traps at about 8 kilometers, you would tend to maximize the information gain, so you're getting close to independence at that point. But I suspect that this would vary among the land cover types, where the mosquitoes may fly farther in certain land cover types. So that's something we're interested in looking at going forward, is how this may vary among the different types. And for forecasting, it was encouraging that in a lot of regions there was dependence among the trap, among years for the trap counts, so that the number going into diapause did seem to relate to the number of the following spring at the start of trapping. And then month-to-month connections within season were strong, and then we'll be incorporating these into forecasting models for vector control decision support. And since I'm a co-moderator, I think I better get off the stage. I'd just like to acknowledge the districts who contributed a large amount of data to this, and also our computer programmer and NOAA and NASA for funding. Thank you.